social work. Social work has the power to change people's lives for the better. This podcast aims to help you learn, think, and act with integrity so people who need social work will get help that will transform their lives. I'm Jo.
And I'm Jerry. So welcome to this podcast, which is the third in series two. We've just launched our podcast on iTunes and we've uploaded 10 episodes now of series one and have just started the new episodes from series two. There were two last month and this is the first one for May. Each month we're going to be talking about two particular issues. The first issue will be something that we've kind of planned that will be around social work practice in organisations or work with other agencies or work in the public domain. And that's building on podcasts from series one about how social workers use ourselves and work with colleagues. And then the other podcast in the month will be a reflective conversation about something that's happening in social work at the moment and our thoughts on that. So we'll post our first podcast on the second Friday of the month and the other podcast on the fourth Friday of the month. And last month we posted podcasts on leadership and a reflective conversation on training and how not to use the word training when talking about training. So we hope you're enjoying the podcasts. Do let us know what you think by visiting our website, which is www.helpfulsocialwork.com, or by commenting on iTunes. And we look forward to hearing from you. And thanks to those who have been sharing the podcast, including people on Twitter, such as Lydia Guthrie, Amanda Taylor, Rachel, Karen Treisman, Ermintrude, Peter Hay, Lindsay Pike and Steve Crocker. And a few people who've posted it on Facebook as well, Andrea Coombs, B. Miller and Claire Pearson. Thank you very much.
Yes, absolutely. In this podcast, we're going to start to look at how social work works with other agencies. Social work is rarely the only agency involved in a child, adult's or family's life. And so we've really all got to work together to effectively support people. How we interact with other agencies affects us and it affects our ability to achieve difference in people's lives. We will look at the way in which social work relates to other agencies. And in particular, in this episode, we're going to be thinking about our aims and our identities.
Yeah, and the first thing that we wanted to consider is what social work actually offers. And that's quite an interesting question. And we've just been discussing it and preparing for this podcast, actually, that social work doesn't have a really clear single thing that it does. And I was in a workshop last week with health and social care managers in a local authority. And one of the things that came out clearly was that social workers and health managers did feel that they had different things to offer, but the social work managers felt that what they had to offer was less clear than from the health side, from the nurse managers. And they were concerned that in a joined up service, the social work offer could be a little bit lost. And Jo and I were talking about how one of the strengths of social work is that it does draw on knowledge and skills and expertise from a range of disciplines. And there's a really great potential then for cooperation and collaboration. But there also is potential for social work to feel a bit unclear or a bit nebulous. So in that workshop, one of the things that I talked about was the idea of social workers as specialist generalists, which is an idea that I stole from GPs who describe themselves as that. So we have lots of knowledge that is general, but we're specialists in bringing that knowledge together in a particular way. So we have particular viewpoints, skills, knowledge, values, techniques and tools that we bring from a range of different disciplines. And that gives us a unique approach or a unique viewpoint or unique place that we come from, even though each of the particular things maybe some other profession could do. So in a multidisciplinary team, if you had a case, a situation that a group of different professions were looking at, for example, a nurse, occupational therapist, physiotherapist and social worker, potentially all of those professions have a general base that they could do the assessment from. So they could go out and meet the person and find out various things about them and get a general holistic picture. And then in a case discussion, each of those professions would be contributing also from their specialist viewpoint or specialist area, specialist kind of approach. And once you put the support plan together, the whole team would be supporting, but different people would be picking up particular bits depending on their specialist generalism. And everyone would be able to coordinate again because everyone has that kind of general skill. And I think one of the things we do need to do is be much clearer about the value of being generalists, but not let that kind of undermine that we actually have expertise as well.
I think that's such a useful way to think about our role, Jerry. And it's particularly helpful for children, adults and families that because they need us to work together. We really need to model the benefits of collaboration. And I think it would be really helpful for us to start to think, well, how can we do this? Successful interagency work relies on a clear understanding of each other's aims and methods. We need to uphold each other's integrity and ability to make a difference. We need to be really confident that everyone who's around the table can do their job, and we expect that they can do it well. It's that positive expectations approach. And I think, for social work, their identity arises from their aims and the values that underpin how they try to achieve those aims. And the aims and values give rise to ways of working that are sometimes at odds with other agencies. And I think particularly about when you've got an adult agency, like a drug and alcohol agency, trying to support a parent to recover, and you've got child protection proceedings, understandably, the adults supporting that other adult are really concerned about the impact of those proceedings on the person they're trying to support, because they can be very distressing. And sometimes if we're not clear about both our specialism and what we're trying to do together, that can end up being seen as people not being helpful to each other. One of the key things we need to do is be really, really clear about what the aims are. Why are we all sitting around the table? What are we trying to get from it? And in what ways can we be helpful? I think some of the things that can help that as well are really clear protocols around all of our multi-agency working, and a shared understanding of each other's roles, and understanding the way that we work to enhance each other. It's about opening up that discussion and then clarifying what we can do together, and how we're going to move forward with the children, adults and families we're supporting.
Yeah, and those discussions, I think, are one of the things to bear in mind with them, is that they're not going to be abstract professional discussions, because people choose particular professions or roles for personal reasons as well. So if somebody identifies as an occupational therapist or as a social worker, there will be bits of their own personal identity bound up with that. So if we have conversations about our aims or our values or our ways of working or our methods or approaches, they're going to be personal investment in those things. And we do need to be quite careful about how we maintain each other's integrity in that, and we don't challenge the person, but discuss the approach or the role. And it works much better if you're having those discussions if you've got a relationship. Certainly when I've talked to individuals that I've known well about what they're offering and how I can work with them, those discussions have gone quite well. But when I've been in sort of more abstract discussions about those GPs or, you know, those nurses, or heard people feedback about those social workers, it's felt quite a lot more personal because the relationship hasn't been there. So one of the things that we need to do, of course, is build relationships with key people in other agencies. And actually that's reminded me of something else that was quite interesting. I was talking to a group, I think you were there actually, one of the management groups that we were supporting, about intercommunication. And they said, well, you know, rather than just sending stuff to people, we have to kind of chase things, and we have to pick up the phone, and we have to talk to people. And somebody said, and that's not my job. And I remember just kind of being slightly taken aback and saying, well, yeah, that's everything about your job. Your job is relationships. Of course you need to talk to people in other agencies. And yes, it's more time consuming to build relationships and meet people and get to know people. But we have to have those human relationships with people, not just the, so that the professional ones work, really.
Yeah. There's a great quote, actually, Jerry, from Alan Larkin, which says, every time the phone rings, I think that's my job calling. Because he's all about trying to promote relationship and communication and understanding. So yeah, actually those things are, as you say, are the job.
And I think the thing that really struck me about that was that I think like that as well. So I was kind of startled, because I said, oh yeah, I've definitely thought that. I don't want to talk to you because I've got my work to do. And there are sometimes clashes as well, and there historically and traditionally have been quite a lot of clashes between the social model and the medical model. I think that's lessening to some extent, but I think there's a lot of legacy as well as actual conflicts or clashes or where we bump into each other. Some of that is actually historical rather than current. But it is going to be really important for social work to be clear about its offer. And that requires us to really understand our role. And I think to go back to our The international definition of what social work is, our code of ethics, our professional capabilities framework, so that we have a real strong sense of what we're there to do and can explain our contribution.
Yeah, I've been talking a lot to social workers lately about what their legacy is. So I've been kind of trying to promote this idea that social work is a legacy job, and that you've got to understand what it is that you leave behind. But of course, to be able to understand your and look back on your legacy, clearly you've got to know what your role is, haven't you? You've got to know what your intention was in the first place, and we've got to understand what our identity, our culture, and our philosophy is. As you say, what our offer is. Some of the social work has some of the hallmarks, I think, of professionalism, because we have a protected title, we've got specific qualifications, professional body, but these are really recent. And I think we are an emerging profession. And other more established professions have really stronger professional signals and indicators. And once again, I mean, I know that we fall back onto the GPs or the medical model all the time, but titles and artifacts, you know, a stethoscope gives a strong signal. And I don't know that our diary or our notebook, which is what I always think is kind of our artifact, I don't know that that gives the same clarity of symbol. And I think sometimes working with other agencies can lead to social workers becoming less confident about their professional identity. And one of the things for me that I talk to social workers about is how they manage to challenge, for example, a child pediatrician or, you know, someone that they perceive to have more status or more expertise or more to contribute than they do. And they can often really struggle with that. It's so important for children, adults, and families that the social work identity that we have is not unconfident or defensive. When social workers come across as powerless because they feel less confident about their identity, they really can't properly advocate for others. We need to be really clear about what we offer and also to be clear about what other people's offer. So to expect our own professional identity and to respect other people's professional identity. And as you've already said, Jerry, you know, looking at the International Federation of Social Work definition of social work, the BASWA Code of Ethics and the PCF are really good places to start.
Yeah, and I think being confident that expertise can come from a broad base, you know, so this idea of specialist generalism again, that it's okay to offer an opinion from a broad base as much as it is to offer it from a very deep base in a particular area of expertise. It's a different sort of expertise, really.
And that they can complement each other and that they can both be helpful to the family. I think that's the thing, or to the adult or to the child. It's because it's all about how we can all work together to be helpful, isn't it? You know, if we think about spending time with other professionals, that joint learning and joint work that we can do can really help build understanding. We can challenge each other's thinking. And that's really helpful as well. It helps to develop our own knowledge and skills and avoids habitual practice.
Yeah, so we've got an exercise. I think you've used this exercise more than I have. That's quite helpful around exploring differences and kind of uncovering some of those perceptions and that different professions or agencies might have about each other so that you can start to build trust and relationships. So the exercise is I, we, they. And it's on the based on this idea that we tend to use different ways to describe ourselves as individuals. So I do this or I think this, ourselves with others that we kind of identify with. That's the we, and then the other, which is the they. And some of the language and images and ideas that we hold or myths that we hold about people can enforce difference and kind of build distance between us. So this exercise is about identifying how we view ourselves and others and also how they view us, which is quite illuminating. So you have a multi-agency or multi-service group. So, for example, you might have social workers and health professionals, or you might have an older people's and young adults team. And you get into your professional groups so where you kind of naturally identify. And you start individually, so each person creates a statement. I value, I would never, I always. Okay, and then you talk about that in your professional group and then complete a statement together, which is we value, we would never, we always. And then in that same group, you complete a statement about they, the other. They value, they would never, they always. And once those statements are completed, you get together as a whole group and compare how your I and we statements compare with your they statements about the other group, but also how theirs compare to yours. And you start to see the differences, but also the similarities. So there may be some things that you really hold very strongly as your as part of your identity in your group, things that you really value, that you never do, that you always do, and think that those don't necessarily apply to the other group, and then find that they do, as much as surprising them maybe by the things that you assume about them. And the similarities help you to build bridges, and the differences are things that once out in the open, you can start to overcome together.
Yeah, I think that that's a really helpful exercise, Jerry, and a really useful thing to do every so often with different groups, even if you've done it before, because it's really powerful that they, that us and them thinking. Yeah. You know, when we're frustrated, when we feel blocked, when we're not getting somewhere, it's really, it feels as if pointing to them is an easy way out, or a way to kind of talk about your frustration. But actually, children, families, they're adults, they don't want duplication, replication and confusion between agencies. They really need us to work effectively so that we can use all the expertise, and they need to know what social work offers and how that fits in with the other support they require. So for us, if we're open to discussion, to listening to the other side, negotiation, development of how we work, and we keep that focus on improving people's lives, then we'll find that people in we'll find people in other professions who do that too, and we'll be able to be much more effective. And I think for me that leads to two reflective points. And the first one is, how confident am I in my identity as a social worker? And the second one is, how do I challenge or contribute to stereotypes of other agencies?
Great. Thank you very much, Jo.
It was interesting, Jerry. Thanks.